In all the discussions we've been having about smartphones, it's pretty easy to focus on the negatives, you know, how distracting and addictive they are, how they're getting in the way of face-to-face contact and relationships. But what about the positives? Smartphones for good. If you're living with a disability or a chronic illness, the technology may well have opened up the world for you in new ways and fundamentally transformed everyday life. In a moment, I'll be joined by a couple of people with professional expertise in this. But first, here's Michael McKenzie in conversation with Gary Oates and Stephen Claren. Gary and Stephen both have memory loss from brain injuries, which they're managing with a little help from their smartphones. Gary's memory lapses began after a brain aneurysm in 2012.
Day-to-day, that creates a few problems. For example, I forgot my wedding anniversary today. And
today?
Today.
But you remember that you've forgotten?
No, I got reminded that I forgot.
Oh, okay.
But for example, I went into the bathroom 3 times to get ready to come out. I brushed my hair, walked out, walked back in, thought, yeah, I didn't shave. Walked back in, had a shave, got to the front door, thought, I haven't done my teeth. Walk back, you know, and like that's just everyday things that you do and should do automatically, and I just forget.
So tell us some of the things that you've worked out with your phone.
Well, a smartphone like will remind me what I have to do for the day. I use a diary constantly, and I also put lots of notes in my phone about what I'm going to do for the day in detail.
Do those notes then come up as alerts, or do you have to go into the phone to check the list?
Sometimes I go into the phone, but what I've found to reinforce my memory by typing something in, it then sinks in and I remember it. So that's part of the process. And I quite often don't have to look back and to remind me what I'm doing for the day, as long as I've physically typed it in the phone.
So in fact, the very act of typing is part of your memory reinforcement.
Yeah, same as writing it down as a note on a piece of paper. If I write a note, I probably don't have to refer to the note, but then I'll spend half the day looking for the note.
But you never forget your phone?
No.
How interesting.
Phone is like wearing a watch. I don't go anywhere without it. I can't afford to go anywhere without it because I'll actually get lost. I won't get home. And I've become a person of routine. So I check I've got keys, Mikey card, phone and glasses. They're the things I cannot leave home without.
Stephen, let's come to you now. And when it comes to your brain injury, yours wasn't an aneurysm like Gary's. You acquired yours by walking across a pedestrian crossing.
Yes, correct. Walking home, crossing a pedestrian crossing, and I was hit by a car at about 35, 40 kilometres an hour. So I was told, because I don't have actually memory of the actual incident. So because I was hit ended up on the bonnet and hit the windscreen, I had a closed head injury, which is they classify as mild traumatic brain injury, and has affected some memory recall and memory function. I've become quite reliant on my phone. I've learned to use many apps found apps and search apps that are out there that help my day-to-day function, besides calendars and appointments and reminders, which, yes, do flash up. Even appointments before I go, they allow travelling time. You need to leave half an hour beforehand and 2 hours beforehand. You get an hour reminder, 2 hour reminder, a day reminder, whatever the case may be. I have an app for my pharmacy which reminds me of my medications, when I need to take them, what frequency. It will remind me when my script's about to run out. I can order scripts by pushing the button on the phone, and they'll then send me an SMS when the script's ready to be picked up.
Is that a special app for that?
Yes, this particular pharmacy, Community Pharmacy Group, have developed that app, but there are similar pharmacy apps out there that manage medications for people. And that's because I do, unfortunately, have a few medications at the moment in pain management and other things. So I take quite a few different types, different times, different days, different dosages. And it just tells you when it's required to take them, as well as one of the key things, I think, is before your script runs out, when you need to renew your script, you can even request an SMS or email to your doctor to get a script prepared, and et cetera. So, but as I said, I also use apps for meditation and relaxation and other memory management and pain management techniques.
I get lost, so I do need maps. Yeah, and I don't remember where I am. So I need all I've got to do is remember to punch in where I'm going and I can get home with the app.
What would your life be like if you didn't have a smartphone?
Chaos. Even if you used a paper diary and you use post-it notes, it doesn't automatically remind you of things. Watches don't send off alarms. It doesn't store pins and passwords. So life would be, and you're at high risk if you write those things down on a bit of paper and lose it or get stolen. So it would be purely chaotic and very heavily rely on a carer or someone else in your life.
And Gary, you hold down two jobs as well. So how would life be for you if you didn't have your smartphone?
I probably wouldn't get to either of them on time or on the appropriate day, but I also probably wouldn't get to them because without the smartphone, I couldn't access public transport. I'd be sitting at home now going, what am I going to do?
It's Gary Oates and Stephen Claren, each of them very much helped by their smartphones, speaking there with Michael McKenzie. Dana Wong is a clinical neuropsychologist at Monash Psychology Centre in Melbourne, and she's been studying the impact of smartphone technology for people like Gary and Stephen. Dana, it's clear that those two men use their phones a lot to help them. Does that reflect what your research is showing as far as the kind of day-to-day for people with a acquired brain injuries?
Yeah, absolutely. So we've done a series of studies looking at how people with traumatic brain injury and stroke use their smartphones. And we've found that in our sample, at least, that the majority of people with those conditions are using smartphones at a similar frequency to people without brain injuries. And they're using apps in a way very similar to what Gary and Stephen have described there. So using things like calendars, alarms, contacts lists, notes, maps, cameras, to-do lists, all those things. None of them are particularly revolutionary apps. They're all things that most
readily
of us,
available.
Or many of us,
yes,
use.
That's,
yeah.
Right. Stephen also mentioned helping with medication and also relaxation and pain management.
Yes, absolutely. So there's more and more of these kind of apps available that can be really useful as supplements, I guess, to the, therapies and rehabilitation, and really provide a useful prompt and guide for people in managing their symptoms.
I guess the terrific thing about the smartphone is that it's just one little device rather than many things that all the things we've just talked about would once have been encapsulated in. Mind you, losing that one little device would be a disaster for Gary or Stephen.
Yes, that's true. Although now with cloud syncing, yeah. We have that data there available to re-download onto a new device, which is one of its great advantages. And yeah, you're absolutely right that having so many different types of apps that help with memory and organisation on the one device is one of the biggest advantages of the smartphone, along with the time-dependent reminders, which both of them mentioned, having an alarm that pops up in advance of the thing that you need to remember is something that a diary doesn't do, or a paper note.
Also joining us now is Manisha Aman, who's the CEO of the Centre for Inclusive Design. And Manisha, broadly speaking, how would you say the smartphone has changed things for those generally living with some kind of disability?
Look, it's been transformative, especially when you think about someone with vision impairment or with hearing loss, and think about things like captions and talkback. All of a sudden, people can do the sorts of things that we are all doing. So it's absolutely been transformative. I think Gary and Stephen spoke about maps and being able to navigate through cities and systems, even small things like being able to read a newspaper on a bus without talkback on a mobile phone. Someone with vision impairment couldn't necessarily do that. Now they can.
Yes, well, in fact, you were working at Guide Dogs Australia 10 years ago when the smartphone came in, weren't you? What was it like for vision impaired people to suddenly have this sort of technology available?
Look, it was really interesting. I was actually in the marketing department then, and all of a sudden it wasn't quite like a football grand final, but it did have that sort of impact at the time. All of a sudden people coming in with these smiles, learning how to use these phones, and what happened in about 2009 was that the smartphones came up with this thing called VoiceOver. So until then, if you wanted your phone to talk to you, it cost about $500 and you needed a phone that cost over $1,000. But with VoiceOver, which actually was part of the first Apple phones and then a similar product with Android, the phone would actually talk to the person. So it meant everything from maps, so you could tell where you were going, to actually being able to use the phone for syncing and calendars, everything else that we use the phone for, all of a sudden someone with vision impairment could use the phone for.
Well, Manisha, your son has ADHD. How does he use his smartphone?
It's interesting. So for him, it does two things. One is downtime. So I know that in other programs on smartphones, we've talked about distraction, etc. Sometimes downtime is really important for him. But the other thing is it's great for things like dragon diction. So, and also there's a little microphone on the phone now. So when he struggles to write, so he has learning difficulties as well as ADHD, he can actually use his phone to talk to him. The other thing that's been really...
So when you said, what did you say? It's great for his diction.
Well, with Dragon Diction, you can actually talk into your phone and it types it out for you.
I see. Yeah, gotcha.
Yep. So if you're struggling with writing, it means you can use voice instead of writing. And the other part is Audible. So if you're struggling to read, all of a sudden you can listen to your books and
the audio
talk
books.
About them.
Yeah. What about things like, Manisha, like medical emergencies? How can the smartphone help? And I'm thinking for older people in particular.
So one of the things that, and you know, these phones are incredible. There's so much that they could do. So I was talking to someone the other day, and with some of these smartphones, they actually have buzzers and vibrators and callbacks straight to emergency departments. So instead of you needing to have one of those chains and emergency buttons around your neck, as they did in the old days, elderly people can have a phone and they can press the phone and it will go straight back to base.
You're listening to Life Matters with Amanda Smith, joined by Manisha Arman, who's the CEO of the Centre for Inclusive Design, and neuropsychologist Dana Wong, talking about the ways that smartphones are so useful in the day-to-day for people with disabilities, brain injuries, vision impairment, all sorts of disabilities, and chronic illness. And if you're someone living with a disability or a chronic illness, or you're close to someone who is, how helpful a little device, as little device has the smartphone become for you, and in what ways? You can post on Facebook. Dana Wong, how difficult would it be for people like Gary or Stephen, who we heard from earlier, who have memory loss from brain injury, if they didn't have smartphones for memory assistance? I mean, it's sort of hard to imagine now what was available to them before the smartphone.
Absolutely. So, I mean, look, devices from old technologies, including paper diaries and notes, and also older technologies like personal digital assistants or PDAs and pages, they were very effective back in the day. But look, the evidence is that smartphones have a lot of advantages over some of those older devices. The previous research showed was that even though things like PDAs were effective, they weren't in common usage. So it meant that the person with the brain injury needed to learn how to use them, which was often quite difficult. Whereas now, smartphones being so prevalent and widespread, knowledge about how to use them is much greater. So the uptake is also much greater of these devices. And as I mentioned before, having so many different apps in the one device means that you only have to carry one thing with you rather than having a whole suite of maps and notes and diaries and things that you need to have with you at all times.
Well, Manisha, what Dana is suggesting there too that I think is interesting is that the smartphone, well, it isn't a special disability aid, you know, it isn't a sort of prosthetic device. So there's there's a level of kind of seamlessness and also inclusivity to it as well. Is that important, do you think?
100%. For someone who has had to live with disability, one of the biggest barriers is the fact that you can't be like everybody else. Mm. And one of the amazing things about smartphones is that they've been built to be inclusive. So a lot of the services that we all love were really built for people with disability to start with, and they were the gold in the system. So if you think about things, small things like even captioning on Facebook or captioning on videos, things that we would have normally thought of as something that would have been for someone with hearing impairment are now fundamental to all of us.
Yeah, yeah. It's fascinating, isn't it? Dana, Gary Oates, the bloke who had the brain aneurysm, mentioned that the simple act of just typing a list into his smartphone helps with his memory. So the technology sort of, in that case, doesn't really need to do a thing. It's a tool, really, to train his brain, isn't it?
That's right. And so, I mean, there's a lot of anxiety out there, both amongst people with brain injury and also people without brain injury, that using a smartphone to help remember things is sort of like cheating, or, you know, using an aid that might make your brain lazy. And our research is not consistent with that idea. These devices are very useful in supporting memory and reducing the stress that's associated with relying on your own memory capacity to remember things. And as Gary mentioned and described so well, the very act of writing something into a memory device is actually strengthening that memory trace. It's meaning that the learning of that information is repeated and strengthened. So it's actually helpful in remembering that piece of information besides the fact of using the device.
Well, Manisha, you made the point that many of the features in the smartphone that have helped all of us were developed for people with a disability. So things like voice recognition, also large type. Is enough attention now being paid, though, to accessibility when it comes to, you know, smartphone development and apps?
Look, I think that the smartphone manufacturers are doing a really great job. The apps are a different story. So a lot of the apps, some apps are fantastic and they work really well for people with disability. Other apps, not so much. And sometimes it's a bit disappointing when you have an app that, you know, but for a tiny little bit of code, could actually have worked really well for people.
So what makes a good accessible app?
Look at a range of things, but there are four key areas that we look at. One is perceivable, so people have to be able to actually see something on that or be able to access something on a screen. Operable, understandable, so people need to be able to understand what they're looking at, and robust, so it needs to be able to work across different platforms. And perceivable is really interesting. So the way we think about it is if there's a button on the screen and you can't tell the button's there to say, you know, open, then the app can't be used. And there's lots of screen readers, there's lots of different ways for people to be able to see that coders can actually put into the system.
And Manisha Arman is the CEO of the Centre for Inclusive Design based in Sydney. And Dana Wong, Dr. Dana Wong, is a clinical neuropsychologist at Monash Psychology Centre in Melbourne and senior lecturer at Monash University, discussing smartphones for good, helping people with disabilities and chronic illnesses in all sorts of ways. It's great to speak with you both too. Thanks, Dana.
Thank you very much for having me.
And thanks, Manisha.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
And if you've found ways that the smartphone assists you as a person with a disability or chronic illness, or if you're close to someone who is, why don't you tell us about the ways by posting a comment on Facebook. Coming up in Life Matters, growing up in a religious cult and escaping it. I'm Amanda Smith.